ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
हरे कृष्ण Welcome to our Bhagavata Pravaha series of online classes. And yesterday we discussed the first 7 chapters of the 4th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And today we will discuss chapters number 8 to 12. In these 5 chapters, the episode of Dhruva Maharaj has been described by Maitreya Muni. So this is one of the most wonderful episodes of 4th canto and entire Srimad Bhagavatam also. So we can see how a small boy attained the perfection of seeing the Supreme Lord face to face just by practicing devotional service or bhakti yoga for 6 months under the guidance of his beautiful mother Suniti and also his guru Narada Muni. Dhruva Maharaj, although he is a 5-year-old boy, he exhibited a lot of determination and he performed severe austerities, and within such a short time he attained the lotus feet of the Lord and darshan of the Lord and attained various benedictions from the Lord. So this shows that bhakti can be performed under any circumstances by anyone with any background. So we will discuss the details of this beautiful episode in the next 1.5 hours. In the 8th chapter of 4th canto, Maitreya Muni begins with the description of the lineage of adharma. So Maitreya Muni has been describing the lineage of the children of Swayambhu Manu. Swayambhu Manu had 5 children, Akuti, Prasuti and Devahuti. These are 3 daughters, and Uttanapad and Priyavrata, these are 2 sons. So we have completed the description of the lineages of the 3 daughters of Swayambhu Manu, Devahuti, Akuti and Prasuti, up to 7th chapter. And while describing the lineages of these 3 daughters of Swayambhu Manu, Maitreya Muni also described some of the sons of Brahma. And one of the sons of Brahma, named Adharma, his lineage is not described. Some sons of Brahma, like 4 Kumaras, Narada Muni, they became Naishtika Brahmacharis. They did not enter household life, so they don't have any lineage. And some other sons of Brahma, like Kardama Muni and many others, they got married to some of the descendants of Swayambhu Manu, and their lineages are automatically described. But one son of Brahma named Adharma is not described. So this Adharma is irreligion personified. He married a woman named Falsity. Falsity, and she is considered the sister of Adharma. So in this lineage of Adharma or irreligion, there is marriage and union between brother and sister. That's why this is lineage of Adharma. And with the combination, through the combination of Adharma, means irreligion and Falsity, 2 children came out. So they are also brothers and sisters. They are bluffing and cheating. So they are called Dambha and Maya. And from their combination, from the combination of this brother and sister, Lobha and Nirukti were born. Means greed and cunning. And from that, their combination, Krodha and Himsa were born. Means Krodha is anger, Himsa is violence. So they were born. And from their combination, Kali and Durukti were born. Means harsh speech and quarrel. And from their combination, means from the combination of this brother and sister, Mrityu and Bhiti were born, death and fear. And from their combination, Yatana and Niraya. Yatana means pain, Niraya means hell, they were born. So in this whole lineage of Adharma, there is such illicit and unmentionable combination of brother and sister that gave rise to so many negative qualities. So it began with Adharma, unrighteous activities, and it ended with Niraya or hell. So this is the dynasty. Basically, these are all various personalities representing these negative qualities, and if one takes a shelter of adharma, if one leads one life based on unrighteous activities, then he will end up in hell. That's what this whole lineage indicates. So by hearing the description of this lineage of adharma three times, one will attain piety and one will wash off all the sinful contamination. So the whole description of the lineage of adharma is quite disgusting. But how can somebody attain piety by hearing about this dynasty three times? The answer is, one will be really disgusted and feel so awkward to go through this kind of lineage, and one will make an endeavor to stay away from all these qualities of greed, cunning, anger, envy, hell, pain, falsity, etc. And thus one can restrain oneself from all these qualities and then be pious. And also one will wash off all sinful contamination. So as a matter of duty, Maitreya Muni has described this lineage of adharma. But he immediately wanted to describe something very great and pious and very enlivening. So he began the story of Dhruva Maharaj. Means he began the lineage of Uttanapada. Because Dhruva was the son of Uttanapada. Uttanapada was the son of Swayambhu Manu. So Uttanapada had two wives. One is Suruchi, second is Suniti. Suruchi is very beautiful and the younger wife, and the favorite wife of Uttanapada. Suniti, although she is also beautiful and she is also very chaste, still somehow she was not the favorite wife of Uttanapada. She was the elder wife and she was not the favorite of Uttanapada. Suruchi had a son named Uttama and Suniti had a son named Dhruva. One day Uttanapada was keeping Uttama on his lap while he was sitting on the throne, and Suruchi was next to him. Then little Dhruva, who was just 5 years old at that time, so he came to Uttanapada and he said that, "Father, I also want to sit on your lap. I also want to sit on your throne." So he was just coming closer to Uttanapada, but Uttanapada did not welcome him. Uttanapada was a great emperor. As an emperor, as a king, it is his duty to treat all his citizens with an equal vision. And now he is unable to treat his own two sons equally. A king's duty is to treat all the citizens equally, but he is unable to treat his own two sons equally because of his undue favoritism towards his younger wife Suruchi. And he had a neglectful attitude towards Suniti, and he could not welcome Dhruva Maharaj. Not that Uttanapada hated or did not like Dhruva, but somehow he was more inclined towards Suruchi. In front of Suruchi, he could not welcome or entertain this boy, Dhruva. Then, taking advantage of the lenience and favoritism and henpecked nature of Uttanapada, Suruchi became very furious on Dhruva Maharaj. Suruchi started speaking to Dhruva very harshly and with great envy and anger. She said, "My dear Dhruva, you are a small boy. You are unable to see the difference between me and your mother. You cannot sit on your father's lap. You cannot sit on your father's throne. The reason is, although you are the son of Uttanapada, you are not my son. Being the son of Uttanapada is not a sufficient qualification to sit on his lap or on his throne. You have to be born from my womb. So, because you are not born of my womb and you are born of someone else's womb, so you are not qualified to sit. If at all you have a desire to sit on your father's lap or father's throne, you should go and worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in your next birth, if you are fortunate enough, you will take birth from my womb, then you can sit on father's throne." Indirectly, Suruchi, out of her arrogance and envy, he told Dhruva to die and take his next birth as her son. So, by worshipping the Lord. Actually, she was not a great devotee of the Supreme Lord, but he wanted to impress Uttanapada. She wanted to show that she is a great devotee of Vishnu, and thus she is recommending that Vishnu worship to Dhruva Maharaj. So Suruchi, when she said like this, it only reflects her arrogance and pride, false pride in her position. When somebody is very close to some, say, exalted people, because of her closeness to the king, she started looking down upon Suniti and also upon Dhruva. Our affiliation or our closeness towards exalted people should not make us look down upon people who may not have that kind of privilege. So, out of pride, this Suruchi said like this. And the result of Vishnu worship will be release from this birth and death cycle completely. But out of her arrogance, Suruchi was saying that the result of Vishnu worship would be birth in the womb of an arrogant woman like her. So she considered, she gave a lot of importance to herself. She gave a lot of self-importance, so much so that she was thinking that somebody should be doing so many austerities and puja and worship of Lord Vishnu to be able to take birth in her womb. How arrogant and how proud she was. And when she was chastising Dhruva Maharaj like this, Uttanapada did not speak a single word to support Dhruva. That pained Dhruva even more. One stepmother is chastising him and father did not support him. So Dhruva became so disappointed. So he's a small child, tender boy, just 5-year-old boy. So, and because the king was not supporting him and the queen was chastising him, none of the palace residents or maid servants or soldiers who were seeing the whole scene, they also could not come forward to console or comfort Dhruva Maharaj in any way. He's a small child. And Dhruva was so disheartened. He was so disappointed. He was so discouraged. And he became very angry. He was hissing like a snake. It is the responsibility of elders to behave properly in front of small children. If the elders exhibit their envy, pride and harsh behavior in front of small children, that will have a very negative impact on these children. So he is a small child, 5-year-old child. And if Suruchi had any envy towards Suniti, so she should have done whatever she had to do in front of Suniti or Uttanapada and all that. Why she has to become so harsh with the small child? What did the small child do? So, because of the poor consciousness of elder people, sometimes small children also will get affected. That will have a very deep negative impression on their consciousness and the overall thought process and the future course of action also. So, Dhruva Maharaj was so angry. He was hissing like a snake. And then he started walking while crying. He was walking from this Suruchi's palace to his mother's palace, Suniti's room. So he was going there. So meanwhile, the palace residents, whoever had seen this whole scene, the insult of Dhruva Maharaj by Suruchi, they went and reported the whole incident to Mother Suniti. Suniti was devastated. She was already experiencing the neglect of her husband. Her husband neglected her and she was already in great pain. Now that her child, her small son also was insulted by co-wife, she could not tolerate it. Davagnina davalateva bala. Her situation was as if she was like a tender creeper in the midst of forest fire. So Suniti could not bear this pain. Meanwhile, Dhruva Maharaj came and Suniti took this small child on her lap and started consoling him. And Suniti immediately was concerned about one thing. Now that this child has been insulted by my co-wife, he would be having a lot of anger or envy or hatred or grudge towards Suruchi. So my first responsibility is to remove any traces of negative feelings or feelings of hatred in this boy's mind. So being such a responsible mother, being a devotee of the Supreme Lord Krishna, Suniti could immediately give good counseling to Dhruva. She said three things. My dear child, number one, don't desire any harm for others. Means Suruchi must have insulted you. That does not mean you desire any harm for her. So don't have any envy or hatred or grudge towards her, and don't desire any harm. Although she must have insulted you in some way, you should not desire her harm. So don't desire harm for others. Number two is, whatever inconveniences or insults or reversals or difficulties that we face in our lives are only results of our own past misdeeds. So one, don't desire harm for others. Number two, understand that you are experiencing the results of your own past misdeeds. She was not even indicating that Suruchi insulted you and she will experience the result of her deed tomorrow. She was only saying that we must have done some sinful activity. So we are experiencing the reaction through Suruchi. She is just an instrument of our own karma. Third thing she said was, whatever your stepmother said is true. Means what? She told you to worship the Supreme Lord. So to fulfill any desire, we have to take shelter of the Supreme Lord. That is true. So to search something good in the words of an envious person is such a noble quality. Suniti could appreciate the words of Suruchi. There is some element of truth. Although she said with a negative intention, out of pride she said, but Suniti was good enough to accept only that good aspect of that her speech and then neglect the remaining envy and hatred, that negative part of her speech. She neglected her emotion. She only took that words, statement. So then Suniti also said, my dear son, I am just one mother. Who can give you the affection of one mother? But the Supreme Lord Krishna is equivalent to millions of mothers. He can give you affection of millions of mothers. And your father, your grandfather Swayambhumanu, and your great-grandfather Brahma, so they all become successful in their lives by worshipping the Supreme Lord. Because Brahma worshipped the Lord. Brahma's son is Swayambhumanu. He is also a great devotee of the Lord. So Swayambhumanu's son is Uttanapad. Uttanapad's son is Dhruva. So Dhruva, between Dhruva and Brahma, there are only two generations. So even in the family of such a great personality like Swayambhumanu or Brahma also, there are some petty disputes. So that is the nature of this world. There is this envy and hatred and unnecessary negative feelings. Even in the minds of people who belong to such exalted dynasties. So she said, Tvameva vatsashraya bhritya vatsalam mumukshubhir mrugya padabja paddhatim ananya bhave nija dharma bhavite manasya vasthapya bhajasva purusham. Tvameva vatsashraya bhritya vatsalam. Oh, my dear son, please take shelter of that bhritya vatsala Krishna. Mumukshubhir mrugya padabja paddhatim. People who seek liberation will actually take shelter of that divine lotus feet of the Lord. Mumukshubhir mrugya padabja paddhatim ananya bhave, without any deviation in mind, nija dharma bhavite, while performing your prescribed duties as a part of varna and ashrama, whatever. Manasi avasthapya bhajasva purusham. Establish that Supreme Lord Krishna within your heart and worship him. So this is the advice given by this noble mother. So Suniti was a devotee of the Lord. So she did not have any grudge towards Suruchi or Uttanapad or Uttama. And she could guide her son Dhruva also on the path of bhakti. So when we are devotees, when we practice bhakti yoga, we will be having the ability to tolerate reversals in our lives. And we will have the maturity not to envy or hate people who must be causing some trouble to us. We will, our heart will be filled with tolerance and forgiveness, and we will take shelter of Krishna. And we also will consider that the difficulties that we are facing are results of our own past deeds. Yes, it is required that we may have to sometimes take necessary action against people who behave in a very bad manner. But that should be done as a matter of duty, just to rectify the situation, but not with any grudge or envy or negative feelings towards the wrongdoers. We may hate the sin, but we should not hate the sinner. So here Suniti did not have any negative feelings or grudge towards Uttanapada or Suruchi, although they were wrong, certainly. But Dhruva was not a great devotee at this stage. He could not give up his envy or grudge or revengeful attitude towards Suruchi, who insulted him, and even towards Uttama. Uttama was passively sitting in the lap of father, but still Dhruva desired the position of Uttama, and Uttama got it and Dhruva did not get it. So Dhruva Maharaj had some grudge or some kind of revengeful attitude towards Uttama also and Suruchi also. So now our mother Suniti gave him three advices. Don't desire harm for others, and understand everything is because of our own past deeds. Three, worship the Supreme Lord. So to fulfill any of your desires. Dhruva considered this third advice more appealing. He could not follow the first two advices. So Dhruva left his palace, went into the forest to worship the Supreme Lord, to fulfill his desire. And what was his desire? He became so ambitious to sit in a position which is more exalted than even Brahma. I was not allowed to sit on my father's throne. So let me sit in my great grandfather's throne, or a position which is even superior to Brahmaji also, and I will show off to everyone. So with such an ambitious desire, Dhruva left home. And the Supreme Lord Vishnu understood that this boy, this small child, became so determined to worship me. So he inspired his dearest devotee Narada Muni to go and meet Dhruva Maharaj. So Narada Muni was not aware of this whole scene. In one sense, he was not present there. But Narada Muni, being a Trikalagna, he could understand the past history of Dhruva Maharaj, and he is personally guided from within by the Supreme Lord. So Narada Muni came on his own accord to meet Dhruva. Dhruva was going to the forest. Narada Muni saw him on his way, and Narada Muni said, "My dear Dhruva, where are you going?" Dhruva said, "I want to worship the Supreme Lord." Then Narada Muni tested Dhruva. He said that, why you want to go and worship the Lord? You are such a young boy, small child. You are just supposed to be attached to sports. You should not have any discrimination between honor and dishonor. A small child is there, somebody just doesn't fulfill his desire, and the child will just cry, and then later he will just become normal. But it's a very seriously revengeful attitude, just leaving home without telling anyone and going into the forest, and with such great determination planning to worship the Lord in the forest. Forest is filled with so many ferocious animals. He's just a mere boy. So Narada Muni actually wondered at the Kshatriya spirit of this small child, and he's told, "My dear Dhruva, you should be just attached to small games and sports. You're a small child. You should not be affected so much by honor and dishonor. But if you are so mature enough to understand what is honor and dishonor, please be mature enough to understand that honor or dishonor will come as a result of your own past deeds." Just as Suniti also said the same thing. So now one more thing, you are trying to satisfy the Lord. It is very difficult to satisfy the Lord. So many mystic yogis also failed. You should not follow this. Whatever your mother taught you is not an easy thing. So when you go back, when you become little older, then you can come back and worship the Lord. But Dhruva Maharaj was not in a mood to agree to the advice. Narada Muni said, "Yasya yaddaiva vihitam sate nasukha dukkhayoha atmanam toshayan dehi tamasah paravrichyati." We should be happy and satisfied with whatever comes of its own accord. We should not, daiva vihitam means whatever is bestowed upon us by the will of the Lord. Satena sukha dukkhayoho, whether it is sukha or dukkha, whether it is happiness or distress, it is coming of its own accord by the Lord's, by the will of the providence. So we should be happy to receive it. Then only we will be satisfied in life. So then when will we not experience any material miseries? When we have ideal dealings with other people. And we deal with three kinds of people in this world. Whomever we meet in this world, they belong to one of these three categories. In the 34th shloka, Narada Muni says, "Gunadhikan mudam lipset anukrosham gunadhamat maitrim samana danviche natapairabhibhuyate." Gunadhikan mudam lipset. When we meet people who are more qualified than us, we should be happy. Second, Anukrosham gunadhamat. When we meet people who are less qualified than us, we should be compassionate, not feel a sense of superiority complex. And maitriyam samana danvichen. When we meet people who are equally qualified like us, we should make friendship with them. We should not envy them. So there should not be any envy or inferiority complex when we see more qualified people. Or there should not be any pride or superiority complex when we meet people who are less qualified. And we should have friendship with people who are equally qualified. When we deal with people like this, then there will not be any miseries. So like that, Narada Muni started giving lot of philosophical teachings and teachings of detachment and maturity to Dhruva Maharaj. But Dhruva Maharaj said, "My dear Narada Muni, I appreciate your instructions, but I cannot accept them. I cannot imbibe or implement them. These instructions may be suitable for people who have Brahmanical spirit. But I am not a Brahmana, I am a Kshatriya. My blood is boiling because I am insulted by my stepmother. And Dhruva Maharaj also had a lot of revengeful attitude towards Suruchi and Uttama. So my ambition is to attain a position which is superior to even Brahma. And I am sure you must be having some means, some honest means to achieve it. Can you please prescribe some method by which I can attain my goal? I cannot accept your instructions." So Dhruva Maharaj was very honest. This 5-year-old child, when he was so determined to worship the Supreme Lord, and he even boldly and courageously and honestly said no to what Narada Muni said, Narada Muni became very impressed. Narada Muni was not offended that, "Oh, this small child is denying my instruction. I am such a devarshi. I am such a wonderful sage and pure devotee of the Lord, and he is not even following my instruction." Narada Muni was not offended by this. Narada Muni just took the positive aspect of Dhruva's character. He is determined to worship the Supreme Lord. And he may be having a material motivation to attain a position superior to Brahma, but that's okay. So all the material desires will be vanquished. So in the second canto we have studied, Akamaha sarva kamova moksha kama udaradhihi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusha param. Whether you have desires, whether you have no desires, or whether you are specifically desiring liberation, still you can worship the Supreme Lord with all your heart. So having material desires is not a disqualification to perform bhakti. Yes, ideally we should not have any material expectations. Our bhakti should be ahaituki. But even if somebody has material desires, and with that material desires if he approaches the Supreme Lord, still bhakti is so glorious enough to purify the material contamination in the heart of the worshipper and eventually make the heart purified, and one can become pure devotee and all the impurities are gone. So Narada Muni has faith in this principle. So bhakti, anyways, he wants to do bhakti, whatever may be his motivation. Let me neglect his motivation, but let me accept his determination. He is determined to worship Vasudeva. I must teach him. So Narada Muni started teaching the process of yoga to this little Dhruva. "Okay, my dear Dhruva Maharaj, I will teach you the process to attain your goal. So you should go to Madhuvan. You should go to bank of Yamuna. And you should make a beautiful small form of Lord Vishnu. And then start worshipping Vishnu. And you should also meditate on the beautiful form of the Lord." And in the 45th shloka to 51st shloka, Narada Muni elaborately describes various qualities of Krishna's form on which Dhruva is supposed to meditate. Narada Muni describes in the shloka, "Tarunam ramaniyangam arunoshthikshanadharam pranatashrayanam drumnam sharanyam karunarnavam." Tarunam means Krishna is so youthful. Ramaniyangam, all the limbs of Krishna's transcendental divine spiritual body are perfectly formed. Tarunam ramaniyangam arunoshthikshanadharam, his lips and his eyes are very reddish. and very attractive. Pranata ashrayanam. Pranata means if you surrender unto Krishna, or even if you offer obeisances to Krishna, ashrayanam, he will give you ashraya, he will give you shelter. Drumnam, he is transcendentally pleasing in all respects. Sharanyam, he is the only worthy object of our shelter, means he is the worthiest shelter available in the entire cosmos. Sharanyam Karunaranavam, why? Because why he is the worthiest shelter amongst all the deities? Because he is Karuna Aranavam, he is an ocean of compassion. So in this way, Narada Muni described the qualities of Krishna. Narada Muni described the form of Krishna on which Dhruva has to meditate, and he recommended Vishnu worship and Krishna worship, and he also told him to do some Ashtanga Yoga while meditating on the Lord, and he also taught him mantra meditation. You should chant this Maha Mantra, this divine mantra called Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So Narada Muni gave this mantra to Dhruva Maharaj, and you should meditate on the form of the Lord, you should worship the Lord, and also offer tulasi leaves. Tulasya priyaya prabhum. The Lord loves tulasi so much. In Madhuvan, you can find tulasi easily. And you can make a form with mud only, because Dhruva Maharaj may not be able to afford a marble deity or brass deity or any other costly deities, golden or silver deity. But he can easily make a form of the Supreme Lord with mud and water. So you can make that. And whatever best things are available in the forest, you can just offer them, like berries, fruits and flowers. So in this context, Prabhupada gives beautiful explanation that our worship of Krishna should be according to time, place and circumstances. So whatever is available in the forest, so with that paraphernalia, one can worship the Lord. If one is in a palace, he has access to many things, and he can worship in a very gorgeous manner, in a very elaborate manner with so many expensive offerings. But in the forest, when the facilities are very less and he's alone, he doesn't have any assistants, so worship may be simple. But the point is, worshipping with love and devotion is more important than the kind of paraphernalia that we offer. So if we can afford good paraphernalia, we can always offer. But if we cannot afford, according to time, place and circumstances, we can offer things. For example, offering the water from Yamuna and Ganga, such pure rivers, is wonderful. So we should offer such sanctified water, such waters from holy rivers. If we can offer to the Lord, that's wonderful. But if we are in a place where Ganga and Yamuna are not flowing, what to do? Take water, clear water, clean water, and then invoke the presence of Ganga or Yamuna, Gangeji, Yamunachi, Godavari, Saraswati, like that. You can invoke the presence of the rivers in your normal water and sanctify that water, keep the water clean, and then offer that water to the Lord. So worship can be according to time, place and circumstances. So Narada Muni taught worship of the Lord to Dhruva Maharaj, and Dhruva Maharaj went to Mahavan. And when Dhruva Maharaj went to Mahavan to perform austerities, Narada Muni went to Dhruva's kingdom, Uttanapada's kingdom, and met Uttanapada. Uttanapada was looking so morose. He was feeling so guilty. He was so repentant that because of him, his child, his Dhruva Maharaj, just left home. And by this time, Uttanapada realized his mistake. I am such a henpecked husband. When Narada Muni went and asked Uttanapada, "Oh, Uttanapada, why are you looking so morose? Is your dharma, artha, kama happening well?" Because such people who are absorbed in political affairs and kingdom affairs and family affairs, they won't be able to think about moksha. So Narada Muni asked Uttanapada, "How is your dharma, artha, kama going on?" Then Uttanapada said, "I am such a sinful person. I am a very henpecked husband. Because of my favoritism towards my younger wife, I neglected my chaste elder wife and her son Dhruva, and this little boy just left home because of my mistake, my sin. I am so cruel. So what will happen to my son? He is in the forest. Maybe some ferocious animals must have attacked him, or maybe he is hungry. How is he surviving? I don't know." He was feeling so bad about it. So ideally, one should not do any mistakes, but average human being will perform some mistakes. So Tanpada also did some mistake, although he is an exalted soul, but still some mistake has happened through him also. But Uttanapada was honest enough to admit his mistake and regret very honestly for that mistake. And he never repeated that mistake also. And he remembered that mistake, acknowledged that mistake, and he was very honest. He did not justify that mistake. So mistakes are common in this world, but one should be very diligent enough and honest enough to admit those mistakes, just as Uttanapada did. So the first best thing that Uttanapada could not do was taking care of Dhruva and Suniti. But now he realizes his mistake. At least he is doing the second best thing of not repeating that mistake. So Narada Muni consoled Uttanapada. Uttanapada, don't worry. Your son will be successful, and because of your son, you will become famous also. He will be doing the most difficult thing, that is to please the Supreme Lord. He will please the Supreme Lord Vishnu within a short time, and doing this is difficult even for the greatest devotees also, greatest demigods also. Lokaparair api prabho. He will do such an inconceivable task and he will come back. Don't worry, your son will be successful. Then Uttanapada was hopeful. He became very happy to hear these encouraging words of Narada Muni, and he thought about Dhruva and waited for Dhruva Maharaj's arrival back. Meanwhile, Dhruva Maharaj was performing his austerities in Madhuvan. So, during the first month of his austerities, Dhruva ate only kapitta fruits and some berries once in 3 days. And in the second month, he was eating only dry grass and leaves once in 6 days. In the third month, he was drinking only water once in 9 days. In the fourth month, he was only breathing air once in 12 days. So he was so strict in his austerities. And in the fifth month, Dhruva controlled his breath, his mind completely with great determination, and he could completely capture the Lord within his heart. And because Dhruva Maharaj captivated the Lord within his heart, he assumed the weight of the whole universe. Because all universes are there within the Lord, and the Lord is there within Dhruva. And Dhruva, this little boy, assumed the weight of the entire universe. And as he was standing motionless on one leg, he could even press the whole earth down with his foot. And when he pushed the earth down, everyone became suffocated. All the demigods became perturbed. They all went to Lord Vishnu and said, "What's happening here? We are getting suffocated." And Lord Vishnu said, "This is the result of my dear devotee Dhruva's austerities. Don't worry, I will go and please him. I will go and give him all benedictions that he wants. You don't worry, you go back." Then all the demigods went back. So we completed the 8th chapter. Now we will enter the 9th chapter. So the Supreme Lord Vishnu, on the back of Garuda, went to bless Dhruva Maharaj. So he went to Dhruva. And Dhruva was meditating on the beautiful form of the Lord, and he was able to perceive that beautiful form within his heart, and suddenly he lost that form. And Dhruva became perturbed and he opened his eyes. And that Lord Vishnu, who was manifested within his heart, is giving him darshan in front of his eyes. And Dhruva became really astonished. He was surprised, and Dhruva manifested all kinds of ecstatic symptoms. And Dhruva could not believe what's happening in front of him. He's a small child, 5-year-old child, and he did tapasya for 6 months only, but with full determination and focus and concentration. So Dhruva, when he saw the Lord, he wanted to offer prayers to the Lord. He wanted to praise the Lord. But Dhruva, being a small child, he did not have the necessary vocabulary to offer prayers. He does not know proper grammar or proper language to express his emotions. He does not have sufficient knowledge with which to describe the Lord. So the Lord could understand the awkward position of Dhruva. So Dhruva wanted to praise the Lord, but he did not have the capability, he did not have the ability to praise the Lord. So the Lord took his conch shell and touched Dhruva Maharaj's forehead. And Dhruva Maharaj was enlightened with the conclusions of all Vedic knowledge just by the touch of Krishna's conch shell, Vishnu's conch shell. And entire Vedic knowledge was revealed to Dhruva from within. So just like the Supreme Lord revealed all the Vedic knowledge to Brahma in the beginning of creation, he can bestow that knowledge to all his devotees also when they are qualified for it. Dadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayantate. Our buddhi is not our buddhi. Our buddhi is given to us by Krishna. Not that we are very intelligent or intellectual or scholarly. So Krishna uses the devotee's senses to accomplish some things. Krishna, when somebody is glorifying the Lord, praising the Lord or praying to the Lord or describing the Lord, so that power of description or power of prayer is given to the devotee by Krishna. One should not be proud of that ability to offer prayers or describe the Lord. Here Dhruva Maharaj became so grateful. Actually, Dhruva Maharaj did not have knowledge. He did not have language. He did not have vocabulary. He has no experience. But he had a desire to offer prayer. So only desire to offer prayer or desire to render some service belongs to us. The ability to do it is given to us by Krishna. So we should just desire to serve Krishna. And the facilities to do that service is given by Krishna. Just as Dhruva Maharaj had desire to worship the Lord, desire to pray to the Lord, but the ability to pray is given to him by Krishna. Now Dhruva Maharaj immediately started speaking and he expressed his gratitude first. He says, Yonta pravishya mama vacham imam prasuptam sanjeeva yatya khila shakti dharasva dhamnam anyamscha hasta charana shravanatva gadin prananamo bhagavate purushaya tubhyam. This shloka indicates that our ability to glorify the Lord or praise the Lord is coming from the Lord. Yo antaha pravishya, O Krishna, O Vishnu, you have entered within me. Antaha pravishya, mama vacham imam prasuptam. Prasuptam means my ability to speak has been sleeping till now. And you have entered me and enlivened my power of speech. Yo antaha pravishya, mama vacham imam prasuptam. So you have awakened my power of speech. So far he has been speaking. But Prabhupada says in the purport that when we are using our power of speech to glorify the Lord, then that is the right utility of power of speech. So speaking so many things about this material world and regular these things is not the right utility of power of speech. Although as a matter of duty one may have to do like that. But the right utility of power of speech is to glorify Krishna. Maximum should be glorification of the Lord and very minimal should be for our maintenance. So that is the standard. So yo antaha pravishya mama vacha mumam prasuptam sanjeevayati akhila shakti dharah swadhamnam. Swadhamnam, by your own energy, O Akhila Shakti Dhara, O possessor of all energies, you have enlivened my power of speech. Not only power of speech, Anyamsha, other senses also. Hasta, hands, Charana, legs, Shravana, ears, Tvagadin, power of this skin, touch. So you have enlivened all my senses. Unless our senses are engaged in Krishna's service, the senses are not being rightly utilized. So, pranan namo bhagavate purushaya tubhyam. So, he says that I offer my obeisances unto you, O my dear Lord. So, Mukundamala Stotra also says, jihve kirtaya keshavam muraripum cheto bhaja shridharam. So, jihve kirtaya, with your tongue, try to glorify that Supreme Lord who is Murarippu, who is the enemy of Mura. Cheto bhaja Shridharam means with your consciousness you worship the Supreme Lord Shridhara. There are many other beautiful details in that. Let's stick to Dhruva now. So Dhruva Maharaj is offering this prayer. And he also says that, my dear Lord, you are Supreme One and you are the only shelter and foolish people worship you with material motives. In this way, Dhruva Maharaj also expressed that I was also foolish. I worshipped you with material motives. And Dhruva Maharaj could glorify the Supreme Lord Vishnu as Garbhodakasaya Vishnu, who is the father of Brahma, and Kshirodakasaya Vishnu, who is the super soul in all living entities. And means all the knowledge of Purushavataras has been revealed to this small boy by the touch of Krishna's conscience. Then he says about the superiority of bhakti. Yanir vritistan bhrtam tava pada padma dhyanat bhavajjana katha shravanena vasyat sa brahmani sva mahimanyapinathama bhut kim twanta kasi lulitat patatam vimanat. In this beautiful shloka, Dhruva says, if knowledge, if happiness has to be attained, it can be attained only in two ways. Yanirvritis tanubhratam tava padapadma dhyanat. By meditating on the lotus feet of the Lord. Then bhavajjanakathashravanena vasyat. By hearing Krishna katha from Krishna's devotees. So, we can attain happiness only by meditating on Krishna's lotus feet and hearing Krishna katha from Krishna's devotees. And in front of this happiness, sa brahmanisva mahimanyapi nathamabhut, that brahmananda or the happiness of merging into the effulgence of the Supreme Lord, means merging in impersonal brahma jyoti, is not at all comparable. So a drop of a particle of bhaktyananda is way superior to an ocean of brahmananda. Happiness is there in rendering service to Krishna. Happiness is there in hearing about Krishna and speaking about Krishna and remembering Krishna and serving his devotees. That is happiness, not absorption in his effulgence, not merging in his effulgence. And if Brahmananda is so insignificant compared to Bhaktiananda, what to speak of Svarga Ananda? Kim tvanta kasi lulitat patatam vimanat. Just like when there is fuel in the airplane, it can fly. When the fuel is over, it will just collapse. Similarly, when there is pious credits, then we can stay in heavenly planets. When the pious credits are exhausted, we will have to come to this earthly planet. So the ananda in svarga is so insignificant. Then he says in the next shloka, Dhruva Maharaj, bhaktim bhaktim muhu pravahatam tvayime prasango bhuyadananta mahatam amalashayanam yenanjasolbana buruvyasanam bhavabdhim neshye bhavadgunakatham rutapanamattaham. So he says, bhaktim muhu pravahatam tvayime prasango, O Lord, in the association of your devotees, bhakti will flow like pravaha. Pravaha means flow, the current. Bhaktim muhuhu pravahatam. So muhu is constantly. Bhakti is devotion. Pravahatam means flowing. So pure devotion constantly flows like a river in the association of your devotees. Bhaktim muhuhu pravahatam tvayime prasango bhuyad ananta mahatam amalashayanam. These devotees who are constantly discussing Krishna Katha and taking dip in this pravaha of Krishna Katha, those people are pure hearted. Amalashayanam, they do not have any contaminated aspirations. They have pure aspirations to serve you. So, yenanja solbana muru vyasanam bhavabdhim. My desire is to attain the association of those devotees and hear Krishna Katha in their association. And I do not aspire for any liberation also. Because I can easily cross over this material existence, this material ocean, by being in the association of devotees. Neshya bhavat guna kathamruta panam mattaha. I am already intoxicated by drinking the nectarian glories of your qualities. And if I get the association of devotees, so who are like other people who are also intoxicated in this in this assembly of people who are intoxicated with your glories, this is a real intoxication. So we should not take intoxicants, that's one of the four regulative principles, but we should take the real intoxicant of Krishna Katha. And in a group of such drunkards, group of such people who are intoxicated, we can completely forget this material miseries, material world, one can transcend. Just like drunkards come together, they drink and they forget the external world. Similarly, the spiritual drunkards of devotees who are intoxicated with Krishna Katha, they transcend the material miseries. So this is how Dhruva Maharaj aspires for the association of devotees and wants to hear Krishna Katha from them. And there are so many other beautiful details in Dhruva's prayers. And he says that that association gives detachment. And previously I have never experienced this supreme form, but now I am able to do it. So I offer obeisances to Garbhodaka Sai Vishnu in your form. And you are the merciful maintainer. Satya Shishohi Bhagavam Stavapada Padvam Asish Tathanu Bhajataha Purushartha Murtehe. Just like a cow maintains her calf, similarly you are like our beloved mother and father. You maintain us nicely. You bestow upon me whatever you think I deserve and I need. My dear Lord, I am totally dependent on your mercy. So in this way, Dhruva Maharaj has offered his beautiful prayers. And then the Lord started responding to Dhruva's prayers. He says that, my dear boy, Bhadramte, let there be auspiciousness unto you. And you will rule this world with dharma for 36,000 years. After Uttanapada, Dhruva Maharaj will become the king and he will rule for 36,000 years. And after 36,000 years, you will retire and you will come back to my abode. You aspired for a position superior to Brahma, right? I am giving you my own planet and that will be called Dhruva, Dhruva Loka. So you come to my abode, you reside in my abode after ruling this earth for 36,000 years. And also Dhruva had some revengeful attitude towards Suruchi and Uttama. The Lord will address that also. He says that your stepbrother Uttama will die in the hands of a yaksha when he goes for hunting. And searching for this Uttama, Suruchi will go into the forest and she will be burnt in a forest fire. So here the Supreme Lord Vishnu directly, personally uttered the destruction of this Uttama and Suruchi. So now when somebody commits a Vaishnava aparad or offends a Vaishnava, this will be the effect. However, there will be transformation in the heart of Suruchi, and of course Uttama was innocent. So Uttama becomes very favorable towards Dhruva, and Suruchi also blesses Dhruva after some time. So definitely they will get better destinations, although their death externally in this world seems to be ghastly to demonstrate the power of Vaishnava Parat. But ultimately they must have attained better destinations because of their kindness towards Vaishnava, and Dhruva also became very favorable towards them later. The transformation will also be acknowledged. And the offense also will be acknowledged so that we get a lesson. So we need to see a pastime from multiple perspectives also. And the Lord blessed him like this, he will attain Dhruva Loka. And all the planets will surround this Dhruva Loka. So he also glorified the position of Dhruva Loka. And the Lord disappeared on the back of Garuda. And Dhruva Maharaj, instead of feeling happy, he felt morose. He felt so disgusted. Why? Although his heart was filled with the happiness of attaining such a blissful darshan of the Supreme Lord Vishnu, his heart was also repentant that he had desired some material benedictions. I got darshan of the Lord which is like diamonds, and I was aspiring for some broken pieces of glasses. Although Narada Muni told me I could not accept his advice, I was having revengeful attitude towards my stepmother and stepbrother. It was so bad on my part. So Dhruva regretted for his material desires. So this is what bhakti does to a person. So having such deep-rooted material ambitions and revengeful and envious attitude towards other people, although they are offenders, that is not good. That is not proper for a devotee. Devotee should not have any grudge or envy or hatred towards other people, even if they envy. Yudhishthira Maharaj never envied Duryodhan. Although Duryodhan had envy towards Yudhishthira, Yudhishthira never had any hatred towards Duryodhan. As a matter of duty, he participated in the war, but not with grudge in the heart. So, a devotee is supposed to be Ajatashatru. And now, Dhruva Maharaj had revengeful attitude before he became a pure devotee, but after he became a pure devotee, he gave up all that envy. This is what bhakti does to us. So one may go to the Lord with material desires, but the Lord is so expert in such a way that he will fulfill the material desires in such a way that we don't desire those material benedictions anymore. We do not enjoy, even after receiving that material benedictions, we will not enjoy them. So Dhruva Maharaj aspired to sit on father's throne. The Lord gave that throne, but Dhruva did not have much attachment to that throne. He was so detached. So he will take away taste for material ambitions, a taste for material enjoyment, although he gives devotee material enjoyment. Because it's not cheating. Basically, Dhruva Maharaj, basically what the Lord does is, the Lord gives a higher taste to his devotees. You enjoy spiritual bliss. Why are you settling down to this material enjoyment? I am giving you spiritual bliss. Your heart will be filled with permanent, eternal happiness. Not this petty material happiness that is subjected to end after some time. So, material prosperity is not aspired by a pure devotee. So, after this, Dhruva Maharaj goes back to his kingdom. And Uttanapada, somebody informs Uttanapada, your son Dhruva is coming back to your kingdom. Uttanapada could not believe it. He gave some gift to that messenger and he became so happy. He took all his soldiers and ministers and servants and with all paraphernalia on a beautiful chariot, he went towards Dhruva Maharaj, towards the forest outside of his kingdom to receive Dhruva. And even Mother Suniti also became so happy. She was very happy that her son was coming back and he went on a palanquin to receive Dhruva. And being such a pure Vaishnavi, this noble woman, Mother Suniti, allowed Suruchi and Uttama to sit in the same palanquin as her. And all three of them were sitting in the same palanquin. So, although Suruchi had envy towards Suniti, Suniti never had any envy towards Suruchi. She is such a chaste and noble devotee. So, now Suniti's devotion inspired Dhruva to perform bhakti and he became a pure devotee eventually. And Suniti's tolerance and her maturity brought a transformation in the hearts of Uttanapada and Suruchi also. Because of this one Vaishnavi, this pure devotee woman's bhakti, there is a transformation in three other people. So when we perform bhakti sincerely, when we have the qualities of satisfaction, tolerance and devotion and humility and non-envious nature, then that will cause transformation in other people also. Uttanapada was transformed, Suruchi was transformed and Dhruva became a pure devotee, all because of Suniti. Suniti gets the maximum credit in this whole pastime. Although her role seems to be very less, but she is the main personality in this whole pastime who brought about all the nectar there in this pastime. So, Dhruva Maharaj came and Suniti received him and Suniti embraced Dhruva Maharaj and literally bathed this small child with her tears and her milk coming from her body. And it is like Rajyabhishek for Dhruva. So, during the Abhishek, during the ceremony of coronation, coronating somebody as a king, he will be bathed with milk and water. So, Dhruva is being bathed with the milk coming from Suniti's body and also tears coming from her body. And Uttanapada also embraced this Dhruva. And all the people there, they started glorifying Suniti. Suniti, you are such a wonderful mother who gave birth to such a wonderful child who got the darshan of the Lord within just 6 months. Even Suruchi also, Dhruva Maharaj went and offered obeisances to Suruchi. And Suruchi blessed Dhruva and said, my dear child, may you live long. Earlier she said, may you die. And if you are fortunate enough, you will take birth in my womb and you can sit on father's throne. Like that she said very arrogantly and proudly and harshly. And now that same woman, because of her transformation, she blessed Dhruva to live long. So, when somebody becomes a devotee, everybody respects that devotee. Yasya prasanno bhagavan gunair maitriyadi bhirharihi tasmai namanti bhutani nimnam apa ivasriyam swayam. Now, nimnam apa ivasvayam. Now, there is water. Water naturally flows towards like lower planes. So, when you put water on a floor that is having uneven surface, naturally water will flow towards that like where it is less altitude. Similarly, all respect naturally flows towards devotees from gentle people. Some ruffians are always there to envy devotees, but all gentle people will recognize a genuine devotee and respect him. So when we please the Supreme Lord with our devotional service, then we become very glorious in the eyes of people also. So our glory is not our glory. Our glory is our alignment with Krishna's will, Krishna's devotion. So now Uttanapada received Dhruva Maharaj. So Dhruva, Uttama, then Uttanapada, Suruchi, Suniti. So these two mothers and two children and the king, all five of them went into the kingdom. And in this context, Maitreya Muni describes the kingdom, the whole city of Uttanapada so nicely. And then Dhruva Maharaj lived happily with his father. And eventually Dhruva Maharaj grew up. And Dhruva Maharaj became very gentlemanly person, and he became so loving towards his citizens. And all the citizens and ministers and brahmanas also started appreciating Dhruva Maharaj's good qualities. And when Uttanapada recognized that Dhruva has grown up so nicely with all good qualities that are supposed to be there in a king, Uttanapada decided to enthrone Dhruva Maharaj as the king of this kingdom. And Uttanapada decided to retire. Even before the marriage of Dhruva Maharaj also, Uttanapada decided to retire from this active political or household responsibilities, family responsibilities, and he took to full-time devotional service of Krishna. So this is the nature of Rajarshis. Rajarshis or saintly kings are not attached to palace comforts, and they are not attached to all their soldiers or ministers and servant maids and palace, kingdom, treasury, horses, elephants, influence, name, fame, prestige, etc. They are not attached to all this. As a matter of duty and responsibility, they perform all the kingly duties, but they are not attached to their positions as king. That's why they are called saintly kings. Whenever there is an able successor, they give the charge of the kingdom to that able successor, and they will utilize the rest of their lives for perfecting their devotional service. So they rule with responsibility and they retire with renunciation. So retirement with renunciation and ruling with responsibility is the nature of saintly kings or Rajarshis. So Uttanapada retired and Dhruva Maharaj married. We come to the 10th chapter. So then Uttanapada retired and Dhruva married Brahmi. And he had two sons, Kalpa and Vatsara. And Dhruva had another wife named Ila. And through her, he got a daughter and another son named Utkala. So as predicted by the Supreme Lord Vishnu, once Dhruva's brother Uttama went to the forest for some hunting. And one Yaksha came and killed Uttama. And this news came to Dhruva. And Dhruva became so perturbed. He was so affectionate towards his brother. Earlier he had some revenge, but now he had no revenge. He became so affectionate to his brother and he went on his chariot to Alakapuri, to the kingdom of Yakshas, and he wanted to fight with them. And it is quite natural for an affectionate elder brother, to get so hurt by the unceremonious killing of his brother. So when Uttama was unceremoniously killed by a yaksha, then Dhruva became so perturbed and he wanted to punish those yakshas, punish those miscreants. It is very noble and virtuous on the part of a kshatriya to go and punish miscreants. So Dhruva Maharaj went to Alakapuri and then he wanted to punish these yakshas. So he went with his chariot and he blew his conch shell. And when he blew his conch shell, the wives of Yakshas became frightened. And Dhruva shot 3 arrows at a time and Yakshas came to fight with Dhruva. Total 130,000 Yakshas came. So many soldiers came and one Dhruva Maharaj. So one Dhruva was fighting with 130,000 Yakshas. And Dhruva Maharaj shot 3 arrows at a time. And Yakshas praised Dhruva Maharaj's prowess, and they shot 6 arrows at a time. No, 6 arrows into 1,30,000 yakshas. Means 7,80,000 arrows are coming upon Dhruva within every few seconds. How much time it may be needed to release an arrow? Hardly a couple of seconds. So every few seconds, Dhruva Maharaj was being attacked by 7,80,000 arrows. And Dhruva Maharaj was like sun covered by clouds. And this comparison is also very good, that when sun is covered by clouds, clouds do not have the ability to cover the sun completely. So the sun will definitely come out of the clouds. So that is like one beautiful comparison. And Dhruva Maharaj was also compared to a mountain. Mountain under rain. So when the rain comes on mountain, it seems that the rain is overwhelming and covering the mountain, but actually the rain is cleaning the mountain. Mountain will not be shaken up. Similarly, Dhruva Maharaj will not be shaken up. Dhruva Maharaj will come out with more shining with this rain of arrows. And like that, there are so many such beautiful comparisons between Dhruva and all the arrows of Yakshas. And Dhruva Maharaj came out victorious in all this, in this whole battle with Yakshas. And he started defeating all the Yakshas and then killing all the Yakshas. And the Yakshas, at one point, they could not do anything to face Dhruva. They ran away from the battlefield. So when they all ran away from battlefield, Dhruva Maharaj became happy. And he thought that, okay, now Yakshas just ran away. Let me go inside their city and then check out what is so special about their city, Alakapuri. But Dhruva Maharaj did not do that immediately. He was thinking, these Yakshas are very mysterious people. They have so many mystic powers. Now if I take a break and then wanted to explore their kingdom, they might suddenly attack me without any prior notice. I should be very alert. I should be extremely alert not to relax at this stage. So true to the expectation of Dhruva Maharaj, Yakshas came back again with greater force and attacked Dhruva, not with weapons in a straightforward manner, but they created so many demoniac illusions. You can see in the picture, they created so many snakes that are emanating fire. They created some magical cloud that is throwing some blood, urine, pus and other abominable substances. And they also created so many lions and tigers and other ferocious animals and different kinds of demons. Oh, it's all mystic illusions. It's not a straightforward fight with some maces or arrows or some other weapons. It's all demonic illusions. Dhruva Maharaj did not know what to do. They created a mountain, they created rain, they created flood, they created ocean. So like that, Dhruva Maharaj is in the midst of all these illusions. They are all mystical illusions, demonic illusions. So Dhruva suspected that they might attack at any time, but Dhruva did not expect this kind of attack. He was totally bewildered. So we need to understand that there are so many parallels between Dhruva Maharaj's fight with the Yakshas and in our own devotional service. So sometimes we may practice bhakti, and sometimes we feel that, oh, my bhakti is going on very well and there are no difficulties or obstacles in my bhakti. And my chanting is nice, my hearing is nice, my shastric study is nice, my services are nice. Now looks like Maya will not attack me. One may think like that, a sadhaka. But sadhaka should be very alert. Maya can attack us at any time. Just like Yakshas attacked Dhruva Maharaj without any prior notice, so Maya also can attack a struggling sadhaka at any time. We have to be very alert like Dhruva Maharaj. And now Dhruva Maharaj was attacked by all these mystic illusions, and at this point he did not know what to do. Then all the sages, some sages who had special affection for Dhruva Maharaj, they manifested there and they gave good counseling to Dhruva. Oh Dhruva Maharaj, you should invoke Narayana Astra, the Narayana weapon, and then you should release this Narayana weapon on all these Yakshas, demoniac illusions, and these illusions will completely be cleared off with Narayana Astra. So then Dhruva Maharaj chanted the holy name of Narayana and invoked the presence of Narayana Astra and dispelled all these demoniac illusions. So another important indication here is, when Maya attacks us with more vigor, We think that our devotional service is going on nicely and suddenly Maya will attack us, just like Dhruva was attacked. And when Maya attacks us, then we become more bewildered, because Maya will create more and more creative and innovative ways to attack a struggling sadhaka. Then at one time we get bewildered, so we have to take shelter of other devotees. Only the association of devotees will come to our rescue to instruct us in the process of holy name. So the sages came and told Dhruva Maharaj, you chant holy name of Narayana and invoke Narayanastra and dispel these demonic illusions. One may think that I know Narayana name, so I can chant the holy names and then protect myself. No. Sometimes when the Maya attacks us so much, we may even forget the solutions also. Although we know all solutions how to counterattack that Maya, but at that point we may not be able to apply those solutions. Just like Ajamil was seeing that prostitute enjoying with that low-class man in public. So when Ajamil saw that scene, Ajamil remembered all the Vedic instructions. He was well-read in scriptures. So he was trying to recollect all those instructions in the scriptures to control his mind and control his senses, but he could not control. He was alone. But in the association of devotees, one can apply the scriptural principles, one can take shelter of the holy name better. So one should always stay in the association of devotees. When we are bewildered by Maya, the Vaishnava Sangha will help us. Just as sages helped Dhruva Maharaj. So then Dhruva Maharaj started throwing more and more arrows. When he kept this Narayanastra on his bow, then so many other weapons like shafts and arrows started emanating from that Narayanastra and dispelled all the demonic illusions created by the Yakshas. And Dhruva, with a rejuvenated vigor, he started fighting with all the Yakshas, and all Yakshas were getting killed with the arrows of Dhruva Maharaj. And at one point, Dhruva was on the verge of completely wiping out the whole race of Yakshas only. At that time, seeing that Dhruva Maharaj was getting a victim of Atirosha, excessive anger, Swayambhumanu came there. Swayambhumanu was the father of Dhruva. Swayambhumanu's son is Uttanapada, Uttanapada's son is Dhruva. Uttanapada retired now. So Swayambhumanu, the grandfather of Dhruva, came to give a counseling session to Dhruva on the battlefield. Swayambhumanu said, my dear child, you, my dear grandson, what are you doing now? Why are you unnecessarily trying to kill all the Yakshas for one Yakshas mistake? Don't become a victim of Atirosha. Atirosha means excessive anger is not very good for us. And only in bodily identification we start thinking that other people are killers, or we start thinking that we can kill other people. So avoid unnecessary killing. I am surprised at your act. Even at the age of 5, within just 6 months of bhakti, you have pleased Lord, the Supreme Lord Vishnu, and you are predestined to go to the Supreme Lord Vishnu's abode after leaving this world. So how can you behave in such a way? It doesn't befit your position as a pure devotee. It doesn't suit our dynasty also. We are like Manu dynasty. We have to be very exemplary in our behavior and character. So you should be tolerant now. He says, the Lord is pleased with devotees if they exhibit such good qualities. He says in the 13th shloka, Titikshaya karunaya maitriya chakhila jantushu samatvena cha sarvatma bhagavan samprasidati. Titiksha means tolerance. Karuna, compassion. Maitri, friendship towards other living entities. Samatvena cha, equanimity. Sarvatma, equanimity towards all. Bhagavan samprasidati, with these four qualities, the Supreme Lord will be pleased. Samprasanne bhagavati purushah prakritair gunaihi vimukto jiva nirmukto brahma nirvana mrichati. He also says, our Swayambhumanu says, that if the Supreme Lord is pleased with you, when you exhibit these qualities of compassion, tolerance and friendly nature and equanimity, then you can easily achieve the Supreme Lord's abode, and you are predestined to go it. and now to go to that abode. But now we are exhibiting a character and behavior which is against that quality of a pure devotee. Please don't do that. Excessive anger doesn't befit us. It is a path to hell. And please understand that yakshas, although they apparently they have killed your brother, one yaksha has actually killed your brother, not all yakshas. Although yaksha has killed your brother, please understand that Supreme Lord Krishna is the cause of all causes. Without the Lord's sanction, yakshas also cannot kill your brother. So, under the superintendence of the Lord, under the supreme order and will of the Lord only, your brother has been killed. So, you should not blame these yakshas and you should not unnecessarily kill them in such huge numbers. For one yakshas mistake, how can you kill all the yakshas? How can you just completely wipe out the race of yakshas? Just like yesterday we discussed that Janamejaya, who was the son of Parikshit Maharaj, so he tried to perform a sacrifice in which he wanted to kill all the snakes in this world because one snake, Takshaka, has killed his father Parikshit Maharaj. So sometimes we could condemn an entire race or dynasty for one person's mistake. That is not appropriate according to Swayambhu Manu. He is the ideal man. So Manushya, the word Manushya comes out of the name Manu, and Manu is the ideal human being. So we are all supposed to follow his principles. So he says that, Swayambhu Manu says that the Lord has inconceivable potencies and he in the form of time factor is indestructible and neutral to all beings. So you should understand the Lord's plan and you should not be affected by material modes. And you should understand that without his sanction, not a blade of grass moves. Understand him as the cause of all causes. Don't become so overwhelmed. And our Dhruva Maharaj says that, yeah, I understand your philosophical analysis of the whole situation, but still I lost my brother. Then Swayambhu Manu says that, understand that the Supreme Lord is the cause of all causes. And one more thing is, Dhruva Maharaj became so reactive in this situation because of his brother's death. Because as a small child, Dhruva Maharaj had a revengeful attitude towards brother. If Dhruva had not reacted in this manner to Uttama's death, people might still misunderstand him or they may think that Dhruva is still holding some revengeful attitude towards Uttama. That's why he was not reacting at all to his death. So Swayambhu Manu indicates that also. Oh Dhruva, it has been proved that you only have affection for your brother. So to prove that you are very affectionate towards your brother, you don't have to kill so many yakshas. Please restrain from this behavior. Please don't do this. So give up your anger. And on top of it, you have this, you have displeased Kubera, because Kubera is like the king of yakshas. And you have killed so many yakshas. And Kubera is such a great personality. And the wrath and the anger or displeasure of great personalities will affect our dynasty. Please go and pacify him. So you should say sorry to Kubera for killing so many of his followers. Then Dhruva Maharaj said, I'm sorry, I will not fight anymore. So Dhruva Maharaj restrained from fighting. See, this is the difference between non-devotees and devotees. Even devotees also sometimes become excessively angry or they may also do some mistakes, but they admit those mistakes honestly and they do not justify those mistakes and they will not repeat those mistakes. They will regret for those mistakes. Uttanapada also did a mistake towards Dhruva, but Uttanapada later regretted for that mistake. He did not repeat that mistake. He repented for that mistake. Same thing is happening in Dhruva's case also. Dhruva became a pure devotee, but still he did some mistake here of killing so many yakshas, but he admitted that mistake. He stopped fighting. And Kubera came there. We completed 11th chapter, we are entering 12th chapter. So Kubera came there and told Dhruva Maharaj, Dhruva, I am very happy that you have stopped this fight. So, and I don't feel bad that you have killed so many yakshas. Because yakshas are not the cause of your brother's death and you are not the cause of yakshas' death also, similarly. Because the Supreme Lord is the cause of all causes. So people who are predestined to die at certain point in their life will anyways receive their death through some agents and you acted like an agent. You are acted like an instrument in the Lord's hands. And similarly, Yakshas also acted as instruments in your brother's death. So please, so I have no grudge or I have no displeasure upon your act. So you, I am very pleased that you have accepted the good advice of Swayambhu Manu and stopped this fighting. So you ask any benediction from me. I am going to give you any benediction that you ask. And Kuvera is a very wealthy person. Dhruva Maharaj could have asked a lot of wealth from Kuvera, but Dhruva did not ask for wealth. You know what Dhruva asked? Dhruva asked, "Oh, my dear Kuvera, please give me unflinching remembrance of the Supreme Lord Krishna. May I completely absorb myself in Krishna Smaranam." So Kuvera said, "Tathastu, I bestow this benediction." And how can Kuvera bestow a benediction upon Dhruva Maharaj? Dhruva Maharaj is already pure devotee. But still Dhruva Maharaj humbly begged for this benediction of remembering the Supreme Lord when Kuvera asked him, take any benediction. So Jiva Goswami gives this beautiful explanation for this. He says that this Kuvera is definitely an exalted personality. He's a very responsible devata. In the universal administration, he's the treasurer of the demigods. So the displeasure of Kuvera could act as an obstacle for Dhruva Maharaj's remembrance of Krishna. When we displease other devotees, whether they are equals or superiors or juniors or whatever, they are devotees, they are exalted personalities. If our activities or our behavior is displeasing, that if it causes some displeasure in the heart of other devotees, their displeasure will act as an obstacle for our absorption in Krishna. So when Dhruva Maharaj begged forgiveness from Kuvera and requested unflinching remembrance of Krishna, basically he is requesting Kuvera not to have any resentful feelings or displeasure or anger upon Dhruva. So because we need to be very extremely careful when other devotees are affected by our behavior or our actions or our words, their displeasure could act as an obstacle in our bhakti. So one needs to be very careful. So here our Dhruva Maharaj is praying for this benediction from Kuvera, and Kuvera gladly offered this benediction. So Dhruva Maharaj went back to his kingdom and his citizens received him nicely. And Dhruva Maharaj continued to rule the kingdom with all good qualities. So Maitreya Muni describes, 12th sloka. Tameva shila sampannam brahmanyam dina vatsalam goptaram dharma setunam meni repitaram prajah. Tameva shila sampannam. This Dhruva was endowed with all good character. Brahmanyam, he is very respectful to the Brahmanas. Dina Vatsalam, he is very compassionate to all poor people, all people who are little weak. And Goptaram Dharma Setunam, he upholds Dharma. And Menire Pitaram Prajaha, he would rule the citizens as if he is like their father. So in this way, Dhruva Maharaj ruled Bhumandala for 36,000 years. And he retired finally and handed over the kingdom to his son. And Dhruva Maharaj went to Badrikashram after 36,000 years of rule. And in Badrikashram, Dhruva Maharaj performed yoga and he was worshipping the Supreme Lord, the deity form, and he would be doing hearing and chanting. And he associated with the sages there at Badrikashram. And eventually, Dhruva has seen a beautiful airplane descending from the Supreme Lord's abode, Vaikuntha. And in that Vaikuntha airplane, he saw two effulgent personalities named Nanda and Sunanda. So this Nanda and Sunanda came in this Vaikuntha airplane to take Dhruva Maharaj to the Supreme Lord Vishnu's abode, which is also called Dhruva Loka. So Dhruva Maharaj expressed his gratitude to Nanda and Sunanda. He offered obeisances to this Vaikuntha airplane. He took bath. He performed the necessary rituals. And he offered obeisances to all the sages. And he circumambulated them. And he begged their permission. Vaikuntha airplane has come to take me. I seek your sincere blessings so that I can board this airplane. Here, Dhruva Maharaj is seeking blessings from all the sages. He was going to Vaikuntha, but Dhruva had absolutely no pride. So, these sages are not going to Vaikuntha. They are living in this world only. They are living at Badrikashram. But Dhruva is leaving this world and he is going to Vaikuntha. But he did not have any superiority complex or pride in his heart. He only had humility at his heart. And he genuinely, sincerely offered respects to all the sages seeking their blessings before boarding Vaikuntha airplane. At that time, death personified, Mrityu has come there. Dhruva has kept his leg, kept his foot on the head of Mrityu and boarded the Vaikuntha airplane sent by the Lord. So now Dhruva Maharaj, he exhibited pridelessness. He exhibited humility. Now he will exhibit gratitude also. So Dhruva Maharaj boarded the airplane. He was about to move in that airplane, but suddenly one thought came in Dhruva's mind. So he did not want to go to Vaikuntha. He wanted to jump off from the airplane. He did not want to proceed. Why? Because he remembered his beloved mother Suniti. 36,000 years back, it was Suniti, mother Suniti, who inspired Dhruva Maharaj to perform bhakti unto Krishna. She said, Tvameva vatsashraya bhritya vatsalam mumukshubhir mrugya padabja paddhatim ananya bhave nija dharma bhavite manasi avasthapya bhajasva purusham. So it was Suniti who inspired Dhruva to worship Vishnu, and only because of her inspiration, her guidance, now, today, after 36,000 years, Dhruva is going back to Godhead, going to Vishnu Loka, going to Dhruva Loka. So, how he was thinking that, how can I go to Vaikuntha without my mother? I have to take my mother also. He was ready to jump off from the airplane also, but Nanda and Sunanda, the Vishnu Parshadas, who came to take Dhruva to Vaikuntha, they told Dhruva Maharaj, Dhruva, you don't have to jump off. Look there. There is another Vaikuntha airplane. In that Vaikuntha airplane, mother Suniti is going back to Godhead. So, we need to understand that if we become instrumental in some other devotee's approach towards Krishna, or assist that devotee in his bhakti, in his or her bhakti, and developing of love for Krishna, Krishna will show some grace upon us also. Of course, Suniti herself was a great devotee, no doubt about it. That's why she could tolerate all insults. That's why she could bring a transformation in the heart of Uttanapada also, and Suruchi also, and Dhruva also. So, Prabhupada also writes there that by the strength of the devotional service of one of my disciples or devotees, I will be taken back to Godhead one day. So this is the humility of a Vaishnava. So a Vaishnava, although a Vaishnava guides another devotee in their practice of devotional service, but still a devotee does not take pride in one's guidance. Oh, I have guided this person back to Godhead. I have taught him Bhagavatam. I have taught him Bhagavad Gita. I have taught him Vaishnava culture. That kind of pride is not there in the hearts of sincere devotees. So they just guide people in general by considering themselves as humble instruments in the hands of Guru and Krishna. So all credit goes to Guru and Krishna. The credit for one's preaching efforts, the credit for all of one's activities in spreading Krishna consciousness, all of that credit will go to Guru and Krishna. So our only credit is our desire to render some seva to Guru and Krishna and Vaishnavas, and all the ability and facility to perform that service is given to us by Krishna and by the blessings of Guru and Vaishnavas. So we should not take credit for our activities. And secondly, we should also be very grateful to all those devotees who have become instrumental, directly or indirectly, who have helped us in our practice of bhakti. Dhruva was so grateful to his mother that he remembered mother Suniti at the time of going back to Godhead. So one of the most important attributes of a devotee is that gratitude. So one should be grateful to other devotees who have contributed to our spiritual life directly or indirectly, this much or that much. So we should always be very grateful to Vaishnavas. So Dhruva is very grateful to Mother Suniti. So then Dhruva became very happy that his mother is also going, and he happily proceeded towards Vaikuntha. And on the way he has seen so many planets, and eventually he reached Dhruvaloka. And in this context, Maitreya Muni says, who is eligible to attain the Lord's abode? Shantaha samadrishaha shuddhaha sarva bhutanuranjanaha yantyanjasa achyuta padam achyuta priya bandhavaha. Shantaha, peaceful devotees. Samadrishaha, devotees who have equal vision. Shuddhaha, people who have very pure aspirations and pure consciousness. Sarva bhutanuranjanaha, people who are very friendly and pleasing to all kinds of living entities. Yanti anjasa achyuta padam, they can easily attain the abode of Lord Achyuta. And achyuta priyabandhavaha, because Lord Achyuta is their dearest relative, and Lord Achyuta considers them their dearest relatives. So this is the deepest loving bonding between the Supreme Lord Krishna or Achyuta and his devotees. So even Narada Muni also glorifies Dhruva Maharaj in the sacrifice of Prachetas. And great devotees would like to hear Dhruva Maharaj's life and character and his determination in devotional service. And one has to recite this story of Dhruva Maharaj to develop one's devotion towards the Lord, to take some inspiration to be determined in our efforts in devotional service. So we have completed the 12th chapter of 4th canto. In the next session we will begin the 13th chapter. Today we discussed 5 chapters, Dhruva Maharaj's devotional service and his becoming a king and his ideal rule and his fight with yakshas and his retirement and his going back to Godhead. So thank you all very much. Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.